Hello, hello. Welcome to Beyond ADHD, A Physician's Perspective. I am Dr. Diana Mercado Marmarash, a dedicated family medicine physician based in the heart of rural Texas. I once saw my ADHD as a hindrance, but now I recognize it as a unique gift that empowers me to be the person I was always meant to be. Join me on this transformative journey as we explore how ADHD, anxiety, and depression can be understood, managed, and ultimately embraced. Over the years, I've learned that unlearning certain beliefs and habits is just as crucial as learning new skills, and I'm excited to share these insights with you. Join me as we engage in candid conversations with experts, exploring actionable strategies to thrive amidst these conditions. Together, we'll uncover practical insights that extend beyond the confines of traditional medicine, unlocking the true potential of a fulfilled life. Thank you for joining me on this incredible journey.
I am so excited today. I have a dear friend. It's a really special treat. It's the new year, new vibes, new energy. So I have with me Farah Jamil, and I am so excited she's here. She's an executive ADHD coach, and I've been friends with her through social media. You know how that works. And then you meet in person and like everything just aligns. And so I met her in the ADHD conference in November here in Baltimore. And I am so happy to have her today as a guest. And she will tell us a little bit about herself. She tells me she's North American because she is both from the US and Canada. So here we go.
Hi, Diana. It's such an honor to be here with you. And I've been such a fan. Like you said, you know, we first met on social media, then we got to meet in person. So I'm just so pleased to be here with you today.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit about your journey with ADHD. Is it a personal journey or is it you just want to help other people with ADHD?
Yeah. So with me, I didn't find out that I had ADHD until I was an adult. And as you know, this is not uncommon for women. For girls and women, some of us may get diagnosed later in life, and I was one of them. And when I finally discovered it, it made sense. But it was still such a shock, you know, because even when I tried to broach this subject with clinicians, they initially didn't believe me. They're like, no, Farah, no, you don't have it. And then we would go through the DSM-5 together, and they're like, oh, wow, you do have it. I said, yes, I know. And that's what really got me thinking about that we need to have more women of color talking about ADHD. Because to be honest with you, I didn't see anyone who looked like me talking about ADHD. You know, there's that stigma that comes with anything to do with mental health. Even though I'm an Ivy League graduate, I have been working in leadership roles for over 15 years. I've also done teaching at the post-secondary level. I've done all these things. I've been in leadership roles and nonprofit boards. So people look at you and they're thinking, oh, you're just making excuses. And what we've been learning is that ADHD is not an excuse, it's an explanation. And I remember seeing that on a website, and I've been using that to try to help destigmatize and demystify ADHD. So I'm really passionate to add to the voices of other ADHDers and having people coming from different backgrounds talking about it, because as we know, ADHD impacts the entire human population, regardless of socioeconomic status, ethnicity, geography, etc. So that's how I started with my ADHD journey.
Awesome. Yes, I really like that way of explaining it. ADHD is not an excuse, it's an explanation, because when you don't know, you don't know. And then you just label yourself all kinds of things, right? And then we shame ourselves for not being able to do the things that other people can, quote unquote, naturally do in a certain amount of time. But yet there's this back and forth of like, well, the things that I love, I do so good at and I can hyper focus on enough where I lose track of the other stuff that I should be doing, quote unquote, as an adult, that are boring tasks sometimes. And it is so important for us to share our voices and amplify each other's voices, because I might be saying the same thing you're saying, but it just lands differently based on my background, my culture. And when we come together as a humanity and realize that, okay, it doesn't matter your skin color, it doesn't matter your language, it doesn't matter, like, It does not matter. ADHD is a neuroexecutive condition. I don't want to say disorder, but I want to say condition that the more that you understand, the more then you can explain strategies to do otherwise if that's something that you are wanting to do to accomplish whatever you're trying to accomplish. So tell me, when you finally got diagnosed, did you say, I wonder if there's others like me out there? What was that like?
So that's probably it. I was thinking, isn't there anyone else who looks like me who has it? Because I did try talking to some friends of mine because I didn't want to disclose it at first, to be honest with you, because I already felt like I have this external diversity and now I have this internal diversity that I have to contend with. People are already going to try to find reasons to discriminate against me. Am I going to now have to deal with this too? So I was like, oh, great. Yet another thing. But then I thought, well, let me at least talk to some friends of mine and see what they say. But even though they're loving and well-meaning, they said the same thing. Oh, no, Farah, it can't be that. You're too successful. You have loving family and friends. No, this is probably not it. Even though I was thoroughly tested. Okay. And these are also clinicians themselves. And they're like, no. But I'm like, there has to be other people. And at first, it was really difficult for me to even disclose because I didn't know how people would treat me. But then I realized that there has to be others, and I don't want them to feel or to be treated the way I was feeling and the way I was being treated. So that's when I decided to form on Instagram, like one night in typical ADHD fashion, because I kept procrastinating about it. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to create this and I'm going to do it right now. Well, I can do it. So I remember this very clearly. It was 9:30 at night when my brain turned on. It's like, okay, let's do this. And I created a group called Muslim ADHDers because I'm like, there's got to be others. There are almost 2 billion Muslims in the world. And you're telling me that I'm the only one? No, that can't be right. So I created this group. I even created a logo, which I have a new logo now, but I created like a quick logo and created the Instagram account and created my first post. And I did this all in, let's see, 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, probably in about 4 hours. So I was up until like 1:30, 2 in the morning, because I'm like, if I stop now, I'm not going to be able to start up again because I know myself. And in those 4 hours, I did all of that. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what's going to happen, but at least I'm putting it out there. And at first, I'm like, well, can I do this in a way where I'm anonymous and that, you know, I don't have to put my name to it. No one can see me. And I'm like, okay, that's not going to work because how do you build that trust? How do you tell your story if you do it anonymity? So then I very reluctantly, because I hate being on camera, I hate it, but I put my name and I put myself out there and I started telling my story. And people started finding me. Word of mouth started happening that, hey, there's something here called Muslim ADHDers. What the heck is that? And yes, I did have a fear of trolls. I'm like, okay, I'm going to have all these people. They're going to see these two things, Muslim and ADHD, and they're going to just start trolling me like crazy. But thankfully, that didn't happen. Like all these fears that I had, I was building this narrative in my head that was preventing me from, like, you know, getting this out there. And what I got was pretty amazing. I got questions, you know, people asking, oh, tell me more about this. I had people so supportive. They're like, wow, I've never seen anything like this. Thank you for doing this. It's needed in the space. And even though I was like stumbling along, I had to really, I call myself now a recovering perfectionist. I had to let go of the perfectionism because even though professionalism is very important to me, it has been throughout my entire career as a leader, but I realized this was new territory. And I had to be okay with not being perfect. And, you know, it's slowly growing. I'm not as famous as you, not yet, but, you know, I'm slowly growing and getting myself out there. And I'm really trying to continue telling the story because I think stories are so powerful. And you don't have to be Muslim, and you don't even have to have ADHD. But I think when people hear stories, they're like, oh, now I'm starting to understand. Just like you said, certain things will land in different ways for people. So your story is going to land, my story is going to land. And what's beautiful is that each of our stories will hopefully help others in their journeys.
Exactly. I think this recovering perfectionist thing is a symptom of ADHD because so much Have we been burned in the past whenever we didn't look at the core details? And it got us into probably some hot messes that then got us to spend hours and lots of other time trying to correct that situation, which then, of course, made us become a perfectionist here and there to, I'm gonna try to prevent that embarrassment or whatever, right? But at the end of the day, like you said, you can still do your best and make progress if you're not standing still. I always say a messy first draft is better than a perfect, not completed draft, right?
I love
Because
that because I talk about the three P's, perfectionism, procrastination, and paralysis. And like you said, if we're focused so much on the perfectionism, as an ADHDer, if something's not perfect, then I'll tend to procrastinate. I'm like, well, oh no, I'm just gonna have to wait until it gets perfect. And then I get so overwhelmed that then there's this paralysis where I just don't move forward with it. And just think of all the gems that we're losing out on from people all over the world because they're so caught up in that perfectionism. So that perfectionism, procrastination, paralysis is very real for us ADHDers. And I think it's so sad when that happens to us because we've got so much to offer the world. So many of the innovators of this world are ADHDers or neurodivergent. Albert Einstein was thought to have had ADHD. Sir Richard Branson, the head of Virgin Atlantic, has ADHD. You've got athletes like Michael Phelps, the most decorated US Olympian swimmer, has ADHD. Emma Watson, Hermione from Harry Potter, is also a fellow Ivy League graduate, a UN Goodwill Ambassador, and an ADHDer. So we need to be able to let go of that perfectionism so that, like you said, it's better to have that really rough first draft that's out there versus something that may be perfect to a point, but is never out there. We need to hear from everyone.
Yeah, and I think in learning, like you said, me too, having to say out loud, I have ADHD, I'm a physician with ADHD, and that took a lot of courage because in a world where you're supposed to, like you said earlier, be a professional in our mind, I don't know where that came from, but we put professionalism equals perfectionism, right? And that two things don't go together because I mean, sure, you can have a perfect score on a test, but not be able to communicate a bedside manner rapport with a patient. So, quote unquote, what is professionalism? Being able to communicate with a person and actually help them, or being able to pass a test? Like, how do you differentiate that? And I'm not saying that, of course, flunk your test, but what I'm saying is at the end of the day, a score or a perfect something is not going to give you what you think. And sometimes, even in those messy conversations that we have with some of our patients or clients, either with ADHD or not ADHD, there's a reason you got triggered. There's a reason you're uncomfortable. There's a reason. And it's never maybe you. Maybe it's them, or maybe it's the tone, or maybe it's assumptions, or it could be. So it's never just. Again, you might think you're showing up as perfect, but in their eyes, they might not think you're being perfect, right? And that's the beautiful thing about letting go of perfectionism, that you get to stand in your authenticity and that the message that needs to be said will be said because you said it because you were standing in your truth. And you don't have to. I joke around like I used to. I was so drained and tired that I would tell people, oh, I'm on call. And then I would forget that I told them I was on call and they would ask me, how was call? And I was like, what do you mean? I slept all day. And then you're like a liar, right? And then like you just forget who you told what to. So now it's better to just be like, no, sorry, I can't come to your party, or no, that doesn't work for me because I'm tired or because today just doesn't work, right? So I think this conversation about perfectionism and professionalism and procrastination, I mean, they all play a role and they're all needed. I feel like for us, procrastination, even though we swear we're never going to do that again, when we're up against the deadline, I think we get out of our heads and we stop overthinking and we just and do what needs to be done because, well, we don't have any more time to think, oh, I have a month to do that, right? It's like, no, I have a few hours to do that. So yeah, it's gonna get done, right? Again, if you feel like that's something you wanted to do to begin with, because we all know that if it wasn't anything we wanted to do, the deadlines come and go, and 2 years later, we still haven't done it, right? So
Yes, and as you were telling your story, a few things came to my mind. One is about the theory and putting it into practice. And the way I thought about that is, as an ADHDer, for myself and for many clients that I've spoken to about this, in our heads, we know exactly what we need to do to succeed. So it's not a lack of knowledge. Like, we know what we need to do. We know the theory, but it's putting it into practice that can be very difficult because of that perfectionism, procrastination, paralysis, whatever the case may be. And it also made me think about what I've called the guilt, blame, shame cycle. Because for many of us, we do build this narrative in our heads that, oh, I can't tell them this because then they're not going to like me anymore. Or, if I don't do it this way, then this is going to happen, without actually just saying what are our boundaries. If I'm too tired, then I need to say to people, I'm really sorry. I wish I could be there, but I'm just not able to make it. And not have to create a story to go into people pleasing. There's another P. A lot of P's with our ADHD. People pleasing can be very detrimental. And I didn't realize how much people pleasing I was doing until my diagnosis. And it has made such a huge impact and really helped me to create healthy boundaries and to be able to have those honest conversations with people without that guilt, blame, and shame. And it's so important, I think, for us to really recognize what works with our fabulous ADHD brains. We don't have to be like everybody else because we've got so many gifts. We've got so many ways of doing things. And it may look a little bit different from someone else, but I think we need to start better understanding that self-awareness of our ADHD and what it means for us. And that'll lead to self-empowerment, so that we're not always at the mercy of something else or a situation or even someone else. And hopefully that'll lead to self-advocacy, where we can then let people know what we need to be our best and to be able to communicate in a way so that, yes, we're still professional without having to be perfect.
yeah, that's so important. And I think as professionals, that's the part that we come into play to help empower them, because you don't know what you don't know. So even if you wanted to ask for an accommodation, you have no idea what accommodation you need, because you're not even aware that, oh my God, a timer would be really helpful, or multiple breaks might be really helpful, or I work best in the morning, so let me have a heavy morning and a light afternoon. Or I work best in the afternoon, let me walk in around 10 and walk out at 6, because that's my ideal time, and that gives me time to do my workup in the morning and then come, right? And so again, how can they be aware if nobody has slowed down to ask them, hey, what do you really want? How can we close that gap? How can you even ask for it, right? A lot of us don't even give ourselves the opportunity to ask. Could a change in my schedule be like something that might be doable? Like, we just think, well, everybody else is doing it this way, I must stay in the box, right?
Yes, and I've had the opportunity to do workshops with ERGs, employee resource groups, including a Fortune 500 company. And these are ERGs that are neurodiversity ERGs or ADHD ERGs. And that's one of the things that we talk about is how, if they know that they work in a certain way, what can they do to help themselves? And one of the things that we've talked about is that you need to look at using first what you know about yourself. Like you said, you have to take a step back and know what you need to be your best, because then no one can help you if you don't even know yourself. And then think about whatever organization you're working with, whether you're a physician, whether you are, in a Fortune 500 company, whether you are a solopreneur, whatever the case may be, whomever you're working with, you need to let them know in language that they understand. This is important, in language that they understand. So if you're working for a company and they have certain outcome expectations, okay, fine. Use that and say, in order for us to be able to do these outcomes and to probably do even better, what are your thoughts about doing this and this? So really, you want to work in partnership. You don't want it to be a battle. You want it to be a partnership where you're also acknowledging what they need. It's not just all about you. You're acknowledging how can you work together for what you both need so that not only the individual succeeds, but so does the team and so does the organization.
And I think many times we're so used to thinking that there's something wrong with you, but it might be the system that needs to modify a little bit so that you all can get the end results, right? If the end result is the X number of patients a day, or the end result is have your notes closed at the end of the day, or the end result is meet this for the team, right? Like maybe they have a certain number of sales they want to do, or certain number of new houses they want to sell, or whatever it is that they're trying to accomplish. How can I do this best? Would it be with the help of a scribe? Would it be with, you know, having half a day off to do your administrative stuff? How can you still get the end result that the company needs, but benefits both parties?
Yes. And it's amazing how so often I've had clients who were very reluctant to talk about this with their team or with their supervisor, because it was that fear of being seen as someone who's just whining. And that's why when I coach them, we, as an executive coach and an ADHD coach, and because I've been a supervisor myself, you know, as a leader, I want my teams to succeed, but I'm not a mind reader. If they don't tell me what they need, I'm not going to know. And if they're not performing, I'm going to start thinking, okay, what's going on here? So we need to be proactive versus reactive. We need to be able to work with people. And like you said, really be able to brainstorm together, what can we do so that this is a win situation?
So tell me, when did you decide to become an ADHD coach? Or, I mean, you've been in leadership for so many years now. So that was probably just bonus to add to your...
Yeah, so I actually started off as an executive coach because I was a health executive myself. So I've developed health policies to improve patient care. So that in a nutshell. And I had the chance to experience executive coaching at work, and I totally fell in love with it. I have mentored dozens of people throughout my career, but I had not received coaching before or even knew about coaching. So, and all the coaches, again, none of them look like me. So I was like, it'd be so great if there was like other coaches and maybe I could be one of them. So, you know, I trained, I did intense training and became a certified executive coach. And then it was a little after that, I got my diagnosis with ADHD, and I was like, oh, okay. And I knew the power of coaching being an executive coach. And then I discovered there's also ADHD coaches, which again, I didn't know existed. And so I thought, well, let's train as an ADHD coach, because I was hoping it would be a way to also help myself to learn more about it. And it was such a game changer because I learned so much about myself, which I think has also helped me help my clients. Even though when you've met one person with ADHD, then you've met one person with ADHD. It's a very common saying where all of us present differently. But the more you get to know yourself, and I feel like the more you can help others, because even though you may not be the same, you can relate to many things. So then I trained as an ADHD coach and got that certification. And during that time, I founded Muslim ADHDers. I also founded Interfaith ADHDers because I was very curious about the intersectionality between ADHD and faith. It's not something I heard a lot about. And so I did virtual summits for that. And soon I'm going to be doing executive ADHDers, because as an executive myself, I could see how those in leadership positions who are executives, there's that guilt, blame, shame. And they're like, we can't admit that we have something like this, because now you've gotten to a point where you're considered quite successful, but you're struggling and you're trying to hide that, instead of, you know, getting the support that you need so that you can continue to be a great leader. So I'm going to be providing that as a platform as well, because I know what that's like. I can totally relate to that. And I'm also a coach instructor. So I'm actually helping to train other ADHD coaches where I train. So I trained through the International ADHD Coach Training Center, known as the IAC Center, that's based in Washington State in the US. And we have students from all over the world. So I have students from Germany, England, Australia, US, Canada. And you're seeing how people from all over the world are needing and wanting not only to train as ADHD coaches themselves, but to help their fellow ADHDers around the world. So that's been extraordinary. And I'm continuing to build my coach and consulting firm. That's been quite the process, because I've been a salaried employee my entire career. And now suddenly I'm an entrepreneur and I'm like, what? How did this happen? And it's a totally different world. it's completely different skill set. It's recognizing, okay, there are certain things that I'm really good at, and there are certain things that I find really boring but are really needed, and I need to figure out how to get that done or to hire someone to do that. So that's been, it's been painful and extraordinary at the same time. So it's been quite the journey in that sense. And yeah, I'm continuing to learn and grow. And I think it's because of having that executive coaching background and the ADD coaching background that has really helped me to understand all the different intersectionalities and how there is so much room for all of us in the ADHD space.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I could have said that better myself. Like you said, when you are in somebody, you're following things that you don't like, but you're following, right? But when you become your own boss, there's certain things you don't still don't like, but you know that they need to be done in order for that business to thrive. And it comes from a place of service that you're doing this. It's not, yes, of course, we all want to do well. We serve, we're professional, we want to earn as we are providing this service. But it comes from a place of like, if I can impact your world, meaning your sphere of who you interact with, then you impact 20 people, other worlds, because that person then impacts other people and vice versa, right? And so it becomes a place of like, if you have tools, let me share these tools. And then you share those tools. And then it becomes a place of like, okay, we all are having a better life, because like you said, you're starting to learn yourself and you're acting from a place of being proactive instead of just reactive. And I think for a lot of us who have finally owned our own ADHD, who have invested in our own growth, we see it as a gift, but that we have to learn to unwrap, right? That we have to, it could be a double-edged sword. If you ignored it, we got ourselves into trouble. And if we acknowledged it and fed it in a healthy way, it got us to where we are. Like you said, in 4 hours, you were able to create your Instagram account and you were able to have a business that is now thriving and is impacting people who didn't realize that maybe, you know, in my side of the world where mental health is no-brainer, but it really wasn't talked about in the Mexican American community. Like, they would just label you as chiflada, which means you're being spoiled, or you're just being too rowdy, or you're just, you know, being whatever, right? And not aware that is a neurological thing, that of course you don't want to piss off everybody if you don't have to, right? Like, who would want to pull your parent out of work so that to teach you to sit down correctly? Like, you just don't do that. But if when you do sit down, you're sitting down from trauma because you don't want to be, you know, spanked in the middle of whatever the classroom is. But you don't realize that until you're labeled way later on. It was out of fear that you were, quote unquote, behaving as they labeled it. A good kid should behave sitting down. But what if a good kid is somebody who's asking questions, is interactive, and is not just sitting down being a log, right, in the classroom?
And one of the things that reminds me of is Dr. Ned Halliwell, who's a Harvard-trained psychiatrist who has ADHD himself. He discovered his ADHD in second year medical school. And he came up with a saying that I really like. It's like we have a Ferrari engine with bicycle brakes, something along those lines. Basically, like, you know, or for some of us where it's hard to sit still, or our brains are, you know, we have ideas going, you know, so many miles a minute. But we just don't do things maybe in a regular way because we've got these Ferrari engines, like we've got this brilliance, but we've got these bicycle brakes. And so that's why we can look a little awkward sometimes. Like, here we are trying, like we're not trying to be disruptive. We're not trying to be difficult. But if you've got bicycle brakes on a Ferrari engine, and you're trying to put the brakes on, what do you think is going to happen? It's not going to look very elegant. So when we appreciate having that Ferrari engine, when we appreciate those gifts, because I know in some of the ADHD community, they don't consider ADHD a gift. And I respect that. But I think for you and I, we truly feel that ADHD can be a gift, can be a superpower, and it's going to be different for each of us. So how do we help nurture that? Because we know that in my ADHD coach training, There's data that supports how children with ADHD hear tens of thousands more negative comments than a neurotypical child because they're always being told, sit still, don't do this, why are you doing it like this, why can't you be more like this person? And they're just constantly being bombarded with negativity. Just think how that child and that adult's world can change when you flip the script and you are acknowledging them for the things that they're doing really well with that Ferrari engine. And yes, we've got those bicycle brakes, but having that compassion for those brakes and really helping support them with that Ferrari engine, just think what that could do for so many people around the world.
Yeah, exactly. We don't realize that by the age of 13, like 20,000 more negative thoughts have been told or feedback has been given to a child with ADHD, whether they know they have ADHD or not, diagnosed or undiagnosed. And so that can really make a problem with the self-esteem if they're not even aware that they have this thing. They just feel like they can't follow the rules or do what everybody else is expecting them to do. And yet they don't know that there is something there that is causing them to act that way. And that's why, it's so important to just get screened for anxiety, depression, ADHD, for anything and everything. It might be nothing, and that's okay. It might be just teenage blues, right? But it might be something else that if you now know, then you can decide what tools you can start so that you can have such a different perspective in life and not develop what some of us develop, which is the imposter syndrome. Because yes, we're amazing at some areas and then we don't do as great in others, and we define ourselves only by the area that we're not excelling at, and we think that's the lens that everybody else sees us at, although maybe we're the only one seeing our own negative stuff, right? And so it's important to realize that you get to define and change the narrative for yourself at any time in the journey, and that it is a choice to do something about your current state of being. And with this new year, like, what a best time to be talking about intentions. So do you happen to have a word for the year? Some people like to have a word they're focusing on for their year, or maybe you don't, but just curious.
Ooh, a word of the year. I like that. Let me see. A word of the year. I think I would probably use support, and I'll tell you why. Because I always tell my clients that we need to work from the inside out to support ourselves. So first, if you're going from the inside out, you're starting with yourself. What can you do to support yourself? And that starts with having that compassion for yourself and doing maybe a quick inventory. What are things that you love to do? What are things that you do really well? What are things that, you are maybe having some challenges with and you wish you had some support? Start with yourself. What can you do to support yourself? What can you do to help yourself? Does that mean changing your mindset? Not having that limiting belief about yourself. Dr. Carol Dweck was a psychologist who wrote a book called Mindset. Going from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset. And the growth mindset is where you're not afraid of challenges. You see them as learning opportunities. Yes, you may try something, you may fall flat on your face, but what did you learn from that? How can you take those lessons to help you move forward instead of just being stuck? What can you do to support yourself? And then from there, you start looking for support from the outside. So from the inside out, who are those people that can champion you? Who are those people that can really mentor you? Is there a coach that can help you move forward with your New Year's resolutions or with anything else in life that you're looking to get support on? So really taking that strategy of the inside out and using that growth mindset and recognizing that, you know what? No one is perfect. Not a single human being on this planet is perfect. Nobody. So let's all become recovering perfectionists and let us embrace the support that we need to help ourselves be our best from the inside out.
My word, I think, is connection this year. I'm really wanting to connect with myself, with what, like you said, what fuels me. And of course, connect with everybody out there so that I can see how we're alike, and how we can support each other. So tell me, where can people find you?
Yeah, so I am on Instagram, so you can find me under Muslim ADHDers or Inter ADHDers, and these are both inclusive groups. You know, even if you're not religious, it doesn't matter. There could be some things there that you really like, some people that you may want to connect with. We're a very supportive group. I also have a website called farahjamil.com, so it's just my first and last name, F as in flower, Arah Jamil.com. And I've got some information there about my executive coaching and my ADHD coaching. And there's a button there where if you want a free 30-minute consultation, you can set that up. And I'm happy to have a chat. And I'm also looking to start doing some group coaching. So for my executive coaching clients and for my ADHD clients. So hopefully I'll get some information out there about that as well. And yeah, I love that word connection. I always love connecting with people. So I hope people reach out. I'm always happy to connect.
And last question that I always ask people is, what do you like to see yourself doing in the next 3 to 5 years for fun?
Ooh, for fun. Okay, I like that. I was like, oh my gosh, she's gonna ask me like what am I gonna do for fun? You know, during the pandemic, couldn't travel. So I'm really hoping that I can do a lot more traveling in the next 3 to 5 years. I love learning about other countries, other cultures. It is so enriching. And that's something that I'm really hoping to do. I'm also hoping to be more active. I think, especially for us ADHDers, it's great to help with the dopamine hits and it's very easy to get sluggish. So I'm really hoping that I can work towards some fitness goals. And that may not sound like a lot of fun, but I'm hoping it'll lead to more fun things. You know, maybe I can go do hiking, right?
Exactly. Hiking in Chile or hiking
Yes.
Amazon, or where it might take you.
Exactly. I would love that. Those are on my travel wish list. So those countries are on my travel wish list. And, you know, being able to truly explore those places. Yes, going to the gym is super boring, but if I have this goal that, you know, hey, I want to be able to do all these fun things, then perhaps that can be part of my motivation and get me up and out there.
Yeah, it's what you call playing the long game, right? Like you're hoping this maybe not fun thing in the moment will allow you to do the fun thing later on.
Yeah, and that's the thing, finding that structure and support for our brains so that we can do those unfun things that'll lead to the fun things, you know, because our brains, we need that. We need to be able to help ourselves do the things that need to be done, which may be boring, to help us do the really fun things that we want to do in life.
Well, it was a pleasure and a delight talking with you, Farah, today. And as always, I look forward to seeing you again in person. I can't wait. And I really hope people reach out to you because, like I said, there is a way for us to all connect and be our authentic selves. And you'll probably be one of my guest coaches later in my group if you're up for it because we all need a executive guru with us, right?
I would be honored. Please let me know.
Thank you so much.